So I welcome all of you for this English Dhamma discussion. Actually, this would be the last discussion on Thursday. Then Bante Dhamma Jeeva is scheduled to come on next Sunday. So afterwards, then again the same discussion can be carried out around 8:30 on Tuesday. So this would be the last discussion we are going to do on Thursdays. So we were discussing Tuvataka Sutta. It is literally translated as the quickly. So basically, so Buddha talks about conceit and different forms of conceit, and then when one is tranquil internally, so how one not get into any sort of ups and downs. That means any fluctuations, any oscillations in one's mind. One's mind become fairly sort of steady and fairly stable, and that is what the verse that we have discussed last time. Majjhe yatha samuddhassa umino jayati titho hoti evam titho anejassa ussadam bhikkhuna kareya kohinci. So Buddha has given a very powerful and very beautiful simile. So that is where, as we go towards the middle of the ocean, so it becomes more and more calm, less turbulent, and basically now the ocean is quite strong, deep, but steady, very still. So similarly, Buddha mentioned in one's mind there is no oscillations, there is no conceit, either to the superior side or to the inferior side. There is no such kind of oscillations, vibrations. So his mind is quite steady, firm, and that is how Buddha explained in that last verse. And now we have come to the next verse. So it is going like this. I'll just first read it in Pali. Akitte vivata chakku sakhi dhammang parissaya vinayang patipadang vadehi baddante pati mokkhang atavapi samadhin. Akitte vivata chakku sakhi dhammang parissaya vinayang patipadang vadehi baddante pati mokkhang atavapi samadhin. So it is translated in Sinhala like this. Anavaranavu pasasyati buduhu upadravayan durukarana tamanhata pratyakshavu dharmaya vadalaha. Pinnatun vahansa mubage sondurvu piliveta vadala menava validu pamokha samadhiyat vadala menava. Now this is the question. So in this what you call this Tuvataka Sutta, so Buddha made mind made Buddha, a created Buddha, and he is the one asking questions from the Buddha, and then Buddha is the one answering. Now in the question going on like now akitte vivata chakku, now that is, those are the terms used for the Buddha himself. So one with the five visions, so five eyes, and he can see anything without any trouble. So anavarana jnana, completely open sort of wisdom, everything is quite readily available. And sakhi dhammam parissaya vinaya, and his dhamma is completely capable of abandoning all sorts of obstacles. And please let me know that particular dhamma. And please again mention the Patimokkha. That means we can say dhamma and vinaya, that the teaching and the discipline. And now he is asking to explain. So maybe you can read the proper translation coming in the book, Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation.
So the one with opened eyes declared the Dhamma he witnessed, the removal of obstacles. Speak about the practice, Venerable One, the Patimokkha, and also concentration. So,
concentration, samadhi, yeah.
I didn't like the word concentration. What do they say in Sinhalese for the
Sinhalese,
translation?
this is samadhi here.
In Sinhalese.
Just a samadhi.
I agree. I agree it's samadhi, not
Yeah,
concentration,
correct,
because
correct, yeah.
if you read the rest of the the sutta itself, there's no specific reference given to concentration, but there is there is constant reference to calming things down.
Correct. Ekaggata is one. Now, that is also the Pali term. Yeah. The typical thing is there's a misunderstanding sometimes when we are calling concentration. It is very much like you are talking only about the one-pointedness. But as we move forward in vipassana, it becomes kind of an open awareness where you are not established and mind become concentrated, but not onto a one point. So mind is sort of unwavering and fully collected, we can say. Fully collected, you are not jumping from this to that. Mind is still, and that is also samadhi. So that's why the samadhi is a kind of a evolving factor in that sense. So we need the focused attention, we can say, as the samadhi at the early stage. And then it is evolving, like, say, you do the observation, you do the investigation as a result of using that concentrated mind, one-pointed mind. But later it becomes more and more detached from the whole process. As a result of that, ultimately mind become free. So when mind becomes free, still mind is collected. It is not jumping from this to that. So that collectedness is one attribute of samadhi. So, but that is why sometimes, say, cheto vimutti, metta cheto vimutti, say, animitta cheto vimutti. So when they are referring the higher states of concentration, it is not really pointing to a one place. It's a complete openness, complete freedom of the mind. Freedom of mind through, say, loving kindness. Freedom of mind through signlessness. So that is how even they translate it. So therefore, that simply using concentration is giving some kind of misunderstanding, we can say. Yeah.
I mean, if you near the end of the Patimokkha itself, the word samadhi means to settle an affair. You know, to come to an agreement. To settle things down, because as we read through this sutta itself, he's not specifically talking about concentration techniques. He's specifically talking about calming things down. We know how to settle the matter in our mind. We know how to settle like this idea here about in the middle of the ocean. The middle of the ocean is calm and settled. It's not that it is concentrated, you know. So that's why it doesn't make sense. Actually, he says here in the question, speak about the Patimokkha and concentration. So you could take it as simply meaning speak about Dhamma and Vinaya, or speak about Sila and Samadhi. Speak about Sila and Samadhi. But when he talks about Sila and Samadhi, he talks in detail about Sila itself, about Patimokkha. But where is he talking about concentration? He's not. He's talking about Samadhi to calm things down. So, like, you have to look at his answer. What does he actually say himself as his answer to, like, what is Samadhi when you read? When we go on, we're going to learn what he means about samadhi here. We're not going to find detailed descriptions of states of concentration. We don't find that. We find him showing us how to calm down, how to settle things, how to consolidate the mind, how to not be disturbed, and that's what we're going to find. And you're going to see why this sila is so involved or necessary to living a kind of a calm and a stable life, you know. That's why you're not going to. Yeah, that's why it's so. It's quite confusing if you think this word is concentration. Anyway, that's my interpretation.
Yeah.
You have to listen to what the Buddha says himself about it.
Yes. So here. Can you repeat the translation in this Bodhi's translation?
Yeah, okay. So I'll make one change, which is the word concentration.
Yes.
So the one with opened eyes declared the Dhamma he witnessed, the removal of obstacles, speaking about the practice, Venerable One, the Patimokkha, and also calming things down.
Yeah, that goes well, I think. Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
So again, if we look at even his kind of honorific title, so here the synthetic Buddha is referring to the Buddha himself. It's always interesting how the Buddha refers to himself. Like, firstly, he calls himself the Tathagata. But normally he calls himself the Tathagata. But here, as the synthetic Buddha, he refers to, again, his qualities and his behaviors. Mm-hmm. So he refers to himself as one with eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a person who can declare the Dhamma because he has witnessed it. And he has witnessed this because he has removed the obstacles. So one of the word plays around the word arahant is somebody who...
Vidita Dhamma. Vidita Dhamma.
Yeah, but also arahant is somebody who is exposed.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have anything to hide.
Mm.
So he's not hiding behind obstacles. So he has removed the obstacles. He's transparent. He has nothing to hide. So this, but also removing obstacles is also referring to defilements. He has removed the defilements. And this is also referring to why his eyes are wide open. He's not covered with defilements. And it's also interesting, like in Mahayana, this emphasis that's given on the diamond mind. So here, like, you have to have eyes for them to be opened. So we all have this propensity to have wisdom arise. So that these qualities are intrinsic and we have to develop them. Again, I think there's a lack of emphasis on this idea of cultivation. That, you know, it's not like the Dhamma is implanted in us. It's something we cultivate within us. And again, here, this idea that the Dhamma he has witnessed. So it ultimately comes down to this idea of practice, that we have to practice and have direct experience of the Dhamma itself, and not an intellectual like implant of the idea. We can't graft this idea into ourselves. We have to cultivate this idea based on our own intrinsic qualities, like mindfulness and calming down. We have to cultivate these mind states,
qualities, yeah,
and they are the support for wisdom itself to arise. And it is with the with that witnessing to see things as they really are, yathabhuta dasana, that is wisdom. Wisdom is seeing things as it really is. It is not a logical insight. It is not you heard it from others. You didn't read about it. But you yourself have directly seen and experienced this yourself. And that is what is removing the defilements. And that is what is opening the eyes. And so it comes down to speak about the practice. It comes down to practice. And what is that practice? He's talking about the Patimokkha and also calming things down. So that's what he's going to talk about after this, from here on.
Yeah, actually, I like to add to the same thing. That's he highlights the direct knowledge. So actually, in the certain many other suttas, where Buddha highlighted that, as we discussed yesterday in the sutta teaching session, so there we have taken what you call the Mahasalayatanika Sutta. So there also Buddha mentioned this Janang Passang, both. Chakkuñcako bhikkave Janang Passang yathā bhūtaṃ. So you know it, you see it, and you know the reality about it. So likewise, we can call it, now here it is mentioned with respect to the sense basis, but we can talk it with respect to the aggregates as well. So you know it, you see it, and you know they as they truly are. So you know their true nature. So that knowing part, the through direct experience is again highlighted. And further, as he mentioned, so there's a very interesting term called abhinya. Ye dhamma abhinya parinyaya. So through the direct, so the dhammas, whatever the quality is necessary to be known through direct knowledge. Abhinya parinyaya. So that means through the direct knowledge you are knowing everything. It is not that through the book knowledge that you know everything. Rather, through the direct knowledge, you are knowing everything. Everything you should know properly. And what is the thing that you should know properly? Those are the five aggregates. So five clinging aggregates are highlighted as what you need to know directly through direct knowledge. So that is where the direct knowledge being highlighted again and again in this sutta, through direct knowledge. Abhinya, abhinya, abhinyaya, abhinya parinyaya, abhinya pahatabba, abhinya sachikatabba, abhinya bhavetabba. So all these terms refer that through the direct knowledge you need to develop, through the direct knowledge you need to abandon, through the direct knowledge you need to comprehend. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so when he explains it in the further verses, you're going to find they're extremely practical. Like he's very, very day-to-day. You know, it's not super lofty. It's not it's not a kind of a, what do you call it? It's not an abhijnana. It's not like a higher knowledge. It's very mundane kind of stuff he's talking about. Like that's why it's a patimokkha. It's more like how we behave in crowds with other people, how we behave he says here in contact, he's referring a lot here to illnesses and how we behave around food and drink and clothing and is he a meditator or not? Does he overindulge in sleep or not? Is he involved in like wrong activities, meaning like professions? And so on. Like it's very, very mundane. It's very pragmatic and practical stuff that he's talking about. It's not abstract. So that's why it's very conflicting if you look at, say, samadhi up here as meaning some sort of obscure, like you're developing jhanas and trying to develop superpowers and other things. Here the Patimokkha is very grounded into day-to-day life. And again, maybe it's just something I find that we don't practice enough in daily life. And people want special practices and special conditions. And undoubtedly, those things are helpful, but they're not the Patimokkha here and his descriptions are more about actually day-to-day experiences. And how are we practicing in those situations that matter, you know? Because defilements hide out. You know, you can hide things and suppress things with concentration. So that's why his references constantly later on are around calming things down. How do you handle a crowd? How do you handle illness? How do you handle yourself around food? You know, there's so much to be learned. That's where your defilements get really active. And are you able to calm those things down? Are you able to like the middle of the ocean? Can you calm down? Can you be like the middle of the ocean in the crowd, in the contact with illness and so forth, with food? How are you active? Are you vigilant? Are you mindful and are you calming things down? Are you following a Patimokkha and calming things down?
Yeah, just fair information is, as he mentioned, available with respect to the Patimokkha. So not, as far as I can see, not much mention about some details about Vipassana or any of these. But yeah, basically what is mentioned is more into the discipline part.
Yes, and that's very consistent in the Sutta Nipata itself. Mm. Like that's why, again, I was recently, didn't want the topic going off into like Satipatthana, it's not here at all, like, which is quite astonishing if we understand that the Sutta Nipata is like maybe one of the oldest collections, the closest to the earliest days of the Buddha. The Buddha himself wasn't explicitly talking about techniques of meditation. He was talking really about ditti, wrong view, conceit. He was talking about craving as a major topic, and yeah, he's talking, this is like one of the rare times that he's explicitly mentioned Patimokkha here, actually. Yeah, Patimokkha and Samadhi he mentions, but it's not in that context of explicit meditation techniques. It's more in a context of calming things down.
Yeah, Yeah, correct, correct. So that's correct. No, so as he mentioned, so we can imagine probably the Buddha talking more into discipline. Now he is establishing the sasana, more are coming to the sasana. Now he want to establish the sangha, and at the same time, on the other hand, when we go towards the end of the Buddha's dispensation, say Mahaparinibbana Sutra and all sort of things, there he talks more into the different qualities that you need to develop. Okay, Satipatthana, you need to develop five faculties, you need to develop five powers. So likewise, specific names, terms, spiritual qualities are particularly highlighted. But in this suttas, in the Sutta Nipata, so more kind of more into discipline in a way. Yeah, we'll go and see. So anything else that you would like to add, Hayasma? Yes.
Yes, this is the Bhikkhu Bodhi translation of, and he's talking about the obstacles that lead to decline. Decline of wholesome qualities such as right practice, the practice in, so this is regarding where it says, the one with opened eyes declared the Dhamma he witnessed. The removal of obstacles, speak about the practice, Venerable One, the Patimokkha, and also concentration. So the obstacles that overwhelm, particularly, they subdue the person, overwhelm, obsess, and crush him. Obstacles that lead to decline of wholesome qualities, such as right practice, the practice in conformity, practice that does not go contrary, the practice that accords with the good, that accords with the Dhamma, and that is fulfillment of good behavior, guarding the doors, fulfillment of good behavior, guarding the doors of the sense faculties, moderation in eating, devotion to wakefulness, mindfulness and clear comprehension, the dedicated development of the four establishments of mindfulness, the four kinds of striving, the four bases for spiritual potency, the five faculties, five powers, seven factors of enlightenment, Noble Eightfold Path. And I guess further, there's their repository is right there. The bad, unwholesome qualities are based on one's own person. And then they go on to just one small other thing is the removal of obstacles, their abandoning, allaying or calming and quieting, relinquishing, subsiding, the deathless nibbana.
Mm-hmm. So some detailed explanation is there, what is the Patipada. But anyway, the answer that Buddha gives us will start, as he mentioned, very much into the more practical discipline. So even though the commentary jumps to the conclusion,
it jumps and it's really confusing, actually.
I find.
I mean, you have no idea that based on the commentary what he was talking about later on in the verses.
Correct.
There's no hint almost, apart from that last sentence you said of where he's calming things down.
So we'll go to the next verse. So
then maybe we should listen to what the Buddha said himself.
What the Buddha, exactly. So chakkuhi neva lolassa gama kathaya avareya sotang rasecha nanu gijjeya nacha mamayeta kinchi lokasmin chakkuhi neva lolassa gama kathaya avareya sotang rasecha nanu gijjeya nacha mamayeta kinchi lokasmin. So translated in Sinhala as this: asing rudakmata nome lol vanneya ග්‍රාම්‍ය තිරශ්චීන කතායෙන් කං වලහන්නේය. මූල රසාදීහිදු නොගිජු වන්නේය. ලොව රූපාදී කිසිවක් තණ්හා දිට්ඨි මමත්වයෙන් නොගන්නේය. So that is basically the sense restraint, the five faculties, the eye, then the ears, then the tongue, sotang aseshan anugijjena mayas kinchi lokasmin, and that is the three sense faculties highlighted. He's restraining eyes by not going to see whatever beautiful things. He's restraining ears by not getting involved with useless chattering, and then he's restraining tongue by not getting into sort of greedy on any of these, any of the tastes, and in general he is talking nacha mamayeta kinchi lokasmin. So whatever things which is going after through craving, he is not very much interested of that, and he is not highlighting those as belong to me or they are myself. Nacha mamayeta, so he doesn't do any mamayana. So the mamayana means that, so they are myself, this belongs to me, this is I am. So likewise, I related center was a self related relationship, he is not getting to get involved. So that is very much like I understood to the Sinhala translation. So you can explain the English translation.
Yeah, I can. Okay. One should not be restless with the eyes. One should block the ears against village gossip. One should not be greedy for tastes. And one should not take anything in the world as mine.
And the second one actually should not block.
One should block the ears against village gossip.
Correct, right. So it is basically the three faculties are highlighted, and again he is not identifying himself of any of the experiences as myself.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that is basically we can say talking about the sense restraint. Anything different in that the other translation?
No, he just says he would close his eyes to common talk instead of village talk. It's common talk.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's that's okay. Common talk and village talk is kind of similar. And he used covetousness instead of restlessness. So yeah, essentially that we have that self-discipline over the eyes, and we again have self-discipline over what we give attention to in our hearing, and we have a self-discipline over food tastes, and these are very immediate and practical as well. Like it's we know that he's referring to all the six sense bases because it's like a list, and he gives the first three of the list. So we should kind of understand that he's referring to all the sense bases, but it's interesting how he pulls out the ones that are most immediate, what we see, what we hear, and what we smell and taste. You know, these are as long as we're not in touch with other people in physical contact, these are the immediate ones that will arise. I mean, especially if you're a forest monk and you come out of the forest, whatever you see, hear, and taste, you know, those are the things that will be really drawing our attention very strongly. And you know, so it's very immediate, very practical. Like if we put ourselves into the feet of, or into the shoes of the Buddha, it's extremely immediate. It's very grounded. You know, like he's not like I think sometimes he's so practical, people kind of like to dismiss it and immediately dive off and talk about Satipatthana and talk about like really interesting theoretical stuff, and oh, this is what he really means. And you're like, no, I think he just means you just walk out of the forest and what's the first thing to hit your eyes. Like I was experiencing it the other day. I was like, there's no depth here. in the forest. We don't have a depth. You can't see distance because there's no distance here, right? In the forest, there's no distance. So everything looks very flat. You know, you like I was looking at some monkeys and they didn't seem far away or near. It's very flat. You have a very flat sense of perception. And the leaves are very large. Actually, they're very large. They're almost the size of a football. So these monkeys look like very bizarre. They were standing beside these very big leaves. And you didn't know whether the monkeys are big or small. Like, I know logically they're kind of big, and I'm very close to them, but I actually couldn't, because they weren't afraid of me, so I'm very close, even closer than I am to you. But they don't look big or small, like, so I have no sense of depth. And then it's in the shade, so there's no shadow, you know what I mean? There's no, again, no anything to bring out their features. And so it's very flat. So what I'm saying is, the moment you walk out of the forest, immediately there's distance. Immediately there's near and far.
Kind of complications.
There's depth of field, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas inside the forest there's no depth of field. So what I'm saying to you is like the eyes immediately start to travel, whereas where in here in the forest, there's no traveling of the mind. The mind, it's very interesting how the eyes don't travel the same way. They don't travel the same way. And the same when you hear, it's all business when you're in
the
town. Yeah, it's really noisy and you know, hullabaloo going on. Whereas here, it is noisy within the forest. It's not silent, but it's a very peculiar kind of a noise that doesn't quite pull our attention. Like, I mean, if I said to you it's noisy in the forest, that sounds ridiculous, but it really is. There's a whole range of insects and animals that are making their distinct noises. And in fact, you know, whenever there's people stealing the timber, what I notice is the silence. I'm actually listening for, did I hear somebody, you know, cutting down the tree? And then I'm listening to hear, are the insects and animals quiet? Because that's the giveaway. If they're noisy and they're doing their business, no, I must be imagining that there's somebody stealing the wood. Whereas if they're damn quiet, somebody's stealing the wood. And I need to pay attention and investigate further. I'm just letting you know, like, what I listen for. I listen for the silence as a disturbance, not noise. It's very noisy. And the same with taste. Again, as you all know, we're very sensitive to taste and smells. And if there's a different smell or taste, you might notice it again. But if there is a different smell or taste, we all notice it very quickly, that there's something different around, you know. So, yeah, and we should not take this as mine. It's very interesting how instantaneous this ego is arising. So that this is mine, I hear the sound, or I don't like it, this is not mine. You know, you hear the, I haven't heard it in a long time, that the truck that goes past selling the goodies. You know, there used to be before the coronavirus, but I haven't heard it since much.
No, they are not available. No need.
I don't hear them anymore. But, you know, there's certain noises that disturb us. So that's also not mine. I don't want it. And then there's mine. Oh, I wonder if that'll be mine. I'd like that. And we're drawing our attention to it. But then there's the other mine of superior and inferior as well. You know, that I am superior, and there's this instantaneous recognition of self and other and self. And am I superior or am I equal or am I inferior? But here it's like, is that mine or is that not mine? Meaning, like, I'm this kind of conceitedness. At the heart of everything is this conceit. And again, it's the heart of the Sutta Nipada. Is our relationship with other, with self and the world and items and goods. So it's this, on the one hand it's conceit, and the other hand it's craving and possession. What is our relationship with the world? It's right here. And this is the major theme of the Sutta Nipata, not just this verse or sutta itself.
No, actually this... Now, when he's talking chakkuhi neva lolas, now basically, as he mentioned, while we are in the forest, so suppose there is no way of going for any dramas, beautiful sceneries, and except the what is available inside the forest, so there are no any kind of agitation-based or kind of mind provocation-based sites. So what we have is kind of a calm and kind of... same kind of monotonous type of sights, sounds, smells, taste. So taste is one area where we are going out and trying to get the food, and there we can get various tastes. So one thing is that while we are confined to that sort of environment, there may be a possibility that our mind may start looking for kind of a variation in the sights. I need to look at someone. I need to talk to someone. I need to talk with another person. I mean, so that kind, because you are fairly constrained to a very limited type of talk, a very, very limited kind of sights. And so as a result of that, the craving and the greediness can sort of pushing you to have more involvement. So that is where Buddha takes the point, as far as I can understand. So now don't do that. So don't go for... So even though your mind may be asking, so don't go for such kind of differentiation or a multitude of various kinds of sights. Just limit to yourself to the forest, maybe, we can say. On the other hand, you may prefer to do some sort of unrelated talk. You may be only doing whatever the necessary, say, dhamma-related talk, but the mind may asking you to get involved with something... Gama katha means something village talks, say maybe politics, maybe wars, maybe various other 32 types of this thing. So those are, now mind may be asking those things, please entertain me using those different types of talks, but don't do it. And then rasecha nanu gijjahiya, and probably while you are going on village vindapada, what you may receive may be the very basic rough kind of taste. As a result of that, the tongue, the mind may ask the various delicacies, so, but don't do it. So in a way, we can see that as a monk, so his entertainment is extremely limited. So, and Buddha himself, I mean, through the Patimokkha, through the discipline, so we are not allowed to entertain, say, beautiful sights, say, dramas, say, concerts and whatever it is. And as a result of that, mind may be looking forward for that. I mean, while we are being in the forest, kind of an interest may be growing strongly to go and see something beautiful, to go and read something beautiful, to talk something about the politics and all these, whatever the people are entertaining themselves. But Buddha's advice here is, don't do it. So kind of a sense restraint is highlighted in a way that... explaining the typical, the wanting coming through the mind. So there's a kind of a thirst coming through the mind through because of the craving. There's a kind of a thirst for some beautiful sight, thirst for some beautiful, or rather, some kind of country-related stories, politics and wars and droughts and etc. etc. So such kind of a desire may be available in the mind, asking for them. Because you are in a very limited environment, as he said, it's very much flat. I mean, no much variation is there. What we hear is just the typical sounds, sounds of a monkey, sounds of a bird. So it doesn't entertain the mind as much as possible as you are in the city. So as a result of that, mind is looking forward for that, thirst for such kind of sounds, but Buddha's advice is don't do it. So it's interesting. So anything else you need to add from the commentary?
There were some more things.
Yeah.
In regard to the removal of obstacles, there are two kinds, obvious and hidden. The obvious ones that are listed, the commentary says lions, tigers, leopards, bears, hyenas, wolves, thieves, hoodlums, various diseases, cold, heat, hunger, thirst, defecation, urination, gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, burning sun, serpents. And the hidden obstacles are bodily, verbal, and mental misconduct, the hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, dullness, and drowsiness, restlessness, and regret, and doubt, lust, hatred, delusion, anger, hostility, denigration, which is belittling the character, defaming, insolence, which is disrespectfulness, envy, miserliness, hypocrisy, deceitfulness, obstinacy, which is stubborn or hard to cure, rivalry, conceit, arrogance, vanity, and heedlessness, all defilements, misconduct, distress, fevers, torments, and unwholesome volitional activities. That was the part.
That is related to the previous verse, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the next verse, if you can say about the commentary part.
Are we on 22 now?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that you'd gone to that.
So it talks about the not being greedy on the different sights, sounds, etc.
One should not be restless with the eyes. Mm, one should not be restless. So he says, one should not be restless with the eyes by wishing to see what one has not seen before, and so forth. Sense restraint of the sense faculties is the way to protect one's good behavior or sense. Since this teaching being taught in this sequence was suitable for those deities, the Blessed One begins, one should not be restless with the eyes, showing the practice beginning with restraint of the sense faculties. One should block the ears against village gossip. He says, one should block the ears against pointless talk. And then one should not be greedy for tastes. He expounds on that, but I think we've covered that. And that's in the commentary. I didn't write it here. One should not take anything in the world as mine.
There's a kind of hidden indication for the practice as well. Now, the last term, last phrase, nacham mayacha kinchi lokasming. So that indicates a very interesting kind of, say, vipassana practice in a way, very briefly, because you can't simply do it. I don't think that we can do it simply by the sense restraint. You need a fair amount of practice as well in order to do that. So basically, sometimes when we see things, there may be a mamayana, so thinking, okay, I need it, I want it, this is mine, this is myself. So such kind of identification can go on, but if you are sort of endowed with a fairly good understanding, so that understanding prevents taking them inside. So you are not going for identification, you are capable of seeing just as they are. So that understanding is there. So as a result of that, mind is not interested of possessing them or holding them, grasping them. So that in a way, what I can see is now the sense restraint part belongs to the discipline as well. And on the other hand, the last part, the last phrase, nacha mamaye cha kinchi lokasming, so broadly mentioned that nothing in the whole world is taking as me, myself, I, me, myself, etc. So that indicates a fair amount of a deeper practice. So he has to endow with such kind of a deeper practice. Otherwise, he can't do it, isn't it? What do you think?
Well, like I feel like like I'd like to emphasize more the immediate here and now element. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas I find what you're describing is where you're anticipating noise or you're anticipating seeing things, whereas I would say it's more actually in the practice. Mm-hmm. Like again, maybe I was just struck. I rarely leave the monastery. I don't go out, but I had to go out this week, and I just had this experience of like, you know, just going down to the local town, which is a small town, but it was really busy, you know, people trying to cross the road and people trying to park and pull out and all of this kind of activity, and people talking and discussing. Like it was really interesting, the assault on my experience of, you know, running into village people, running into the village gossip, running into the sights and the sounds, and having to immediately at that time not take any of it too seriously, not give it too much excessive attention, just other than just navigating my way through the world, not to give it any more attention. So I found it a very immediate here and now practice, rather than that we should be warning ourselves. But then maybe it's just because I have a deep practice of Sila, because of the Patimokkha, because of this living in the monastery here. Like, we can take for granted the Patimokkha that's free of charge.
I mean,
that's here.
Available.
Yeah, because of the environment, because of the circumstances that we live in all the time.
Well protected.
Yeah, and we, it's background for us. Mm. And that's because of the Patimokkha. The Patimokkha has established for us all of these factors. And it's only kind of when we step outside of the Patimokkha, as it were, when I step outside of the monastery, that I have to kind of get busy. So in a way, I'm not busy inside the monastery, but I have a lot of practice when I go outside of the monastery. And you know, so I suppose the main thing is, while I'm in the monastery, to not conjure up the discussion and the sights and the sounds and fabricate them in my mind, which is kind of okay. That I don't do a lot of that, so that's kind of okay. It's interesting how the longer I practice, the less I have to really think about it. In a way, I forget, actually. I genuinely forget the experience of being in the world. And so when I'm in the world, then I find it's much more this practice, like in as described here in this verse, of having to actively not get engaged with the village gossip, not actively, you know, to watch where my eyes are going. You know, what am I paying attention to? And I find having that that discipline, like especially from walking meditation and stuff like that, to not look around and so on. So when I'm in the crowd, I don't look around, actually. I'm just really watching where I'm going. So I find that when I'm teaching meditation now, I've been putting a lot of emphasis in recent retreats on walking meditation. And asking people, well, why can't you just walk like this? You know, I don't teach the really slow Mahasi style of walking, because I find like nobody's going to walk like this in the world. So why the hell should you practice that way on retreat? You should walk the way you normally walk and walk mindfully. So I try to get people to do that. And then I say, well, why can't you walk like this to the car? Why can't you walk like this going into your office or into the school? You know, you're able to walk mindfully now, normally. Why don't you just walk normally, mindfully? How about that? And so that's how I'm walking in my life. So I see this verse more in an immediate here and now way, not in a, oh, I need to be careful about any of that. Of course, I learned that on the cushion. I learned that in the formal practices. But it's really when I move into that daily life mode, we'll just say I go down to the local town, that then I have to really double up the effort. But then it's automatic. It's not abstract, if you know what I mean. It's just, I need to put in a little bit of extra effort. And then I see all of these extra sights and sounds and smells and tastes and touch coming in, and I deal with it more. You know what I mean? It's coarse. It's obvious. While here in the forest, it's a little bit more subtle. It's more in the thoughts and in the thinking, because I don't have those real sights and sounds and smells and tastes and touch. So when that's coming up, then I can be aware of that, you know, and I have to give more value to what's really happening around me. You know, like what's really happening is just the sights and sounds and smells and taste and touch of the forest, which itself is kind of bland or monotonous, or like all the colors are green, you know, that there is no depth of field. Like I said to you, I took a photograph of these monkeys. I was like, it's just, I could show you later on. It's a very strange photo. If you look at it, you're like, what's all the things that are missing? And I was thinking, that's my mind. It's all missing. You know, all that other stuff is missing too. Yeah. So I don't know what your experience is. I'd be happy to hear.
Sarai Swami Nansa. And thank you to everyone who has given comments so far. Living out in the forest in Vinaya, you know, they're very important for, the restraint. So living out in the forest and, Vinaya, they're very important for restraint. And, if one is living in a city or an urban area or even a village, it's likely going to be more difficult overall, to maintain, restraint over their senses. If they're living like, in a city or an urban area or in a village, like if a monk is living in a city or an urban area or in a village even, they would likely have a lot more issues maintaining that restraint over their senses. And, cause you're just essentially like, especially in like big cities, you're just being like bombarded by like sensuality. So you got like, all these like places, just making up examples here, like restaurants and like coffee shops and, stuff like that. And, there are a lot of, members of the opposite gender around in cities. You're going to see a lot of women, one could assume. So it's, you're just being bombarded by sensuality in these environments, especially cities and urban areas, but also in villages, at least, more so even in a village than you would be out in the forest. So, being out in the forest and, maintaining these rules in the Vinaya is important for restraint. And, in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta from the Digha Nikaya, the Buddha is saying that if the monks live out in the forest, then their growth can be expected and not their decline. So he's specifically saying, like, to live out in the forest. And that's my comment, is that living out in the forest and maintaining the rules in the Vinaya is important for the restraint of a monk.
I agree with you. Now, basically, Buddha highlighted that, associating the forest depths or associating the forest is one part of the practice, because you can't allow your senses to, as you said, go through the agitation and provocation, and then you are going against the sort of such kind of a trend. At least for some time, you need to come to a sort of a forest where you are not being agitated, you are not being provocated, so you have some time to develop necessary skills. Probably later, you can see to what extent you can maintain. You can maintain even when you are in the urban area. So are you able to maintain the same sort of calmness available and what you have experienced while you are in the forest? So if you being again get agitated, so that means still the practice haven't been fairly deeply rooted. So it's only at the superficial level So when the circumstances are available, you again get agitated. Say while being in the forest, you are calm, relaxed, because there are no much provocating factors. But once you go out of the forest, again you get agitated, again you get provocated, bewildered. So that means still you can't maintain the serenity, you can't maintain the kind of the calmness, dispassion, the qualities are still into kind of fluctuation. So I feel that both time to time, I mean, if possible, if we can experience, say you are associated in the forest and you are strengthening your faculties, strengthening your discipline, strengthening your qualities. At the same time, you go to the city, say urban areas, and see whether you can still maintain without really kind of strongly holding or strongly, say, disciplining yourself. How about a little giving some freedom and see whether the mind is still get involved? So that's why, I mean, say, now when Buddha is talking to Venerable Bahiya, Ditte Ditta Mattam Bhavissati, so, I mean, can we say that he is expected to practice that only in the forest? No, I mean, basically he has to be able to do that even in the city as well. So even though he see various beautiful things, can he maintain a kind of a restrainment? So his mind is not interested of going and getting involved with this, whatever the beautiful sights, whatever the different, say, gossip. And if the mind itself is now not interested of doing that, so that is something beautiful, more than simply the restraint. Now, that indicates some sort of a maturity in the mind, where mind understood the useless nature of those things, and there is nothing substantial in them. Say when you are seeing some beautiful things, so it's still, if it is highly dependent on our restraint, highly dependent on our discipline, so that is one area, that is one possibility, that also possible. Not, but on the other hand, if one has some already sort of say understood mind, where the mind itself has deeper understanding, okay, there is nothing substantial there. So there is, I mean, even though it looks beautiful, internally there is nothing really beauty there. So likewise, if there is a deeper understanding fairly cultivated within the mind, and even though you simply allow the mind to freely move, mind may simply remain with you. Mind doesn't want to go and get involved, because it understood, okay, if I am going out, I will get burned. Now, mind itself is understanding. It is not that we are strongly restricting the mind. Rather, the mind is now fairly based, fairly established on that understanding. As a result of that understanding, that the mind is now not interested of going and getting burnt. So it likes to be secluded. It likes to, as he mentioned, Irving, even among the crowd, mind can be secluded. Even among the crowd, the mind is not interested of going and getting involved with the gossip. Not because you are extremely restricting the mind, rather mind has no desire to do that. So that indicates kind of a mature practice, not simply limited to the sense restrainment. So if you can remember the last sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so the dialogue between Buddha and the Uttaramanavaka, the youngster called Uttara, so about the sense restraint. So Buddha asks from this Uttara, what is the discipline that your teacher Parasariya is teaching you? So he mentioned, okay, my teacher Parasariya is mentioning, so don't look at sights. Don't get into, say, various this kind of gossip and all these things. And so that means he is completely shutting down himself, completely shutting off. So he is not going to hear, he is not going to view anything, so because it can provocate you. So it's kind of a shutting down yourself, shutting, completely closing yourself. So that is also necessary to some extent. But the point is, then Buddha mentioned, then all the dumb people, all the blind people, in completion of this Indriya Bhavana, so the meditation in these faculties. So then Buddha highlighted, it is not the point that I am teaching. So you have some kind of already developed, say, maintenance of your mind, unattached state of mind, which you have already cultivated. Now allow the mind to see what where it is moving. If it is moving to the agitated state, don't be in the agitated state. You just take it back to the middle state, unagitated state. And if it is going to the kind of a depressed state, don't be in that state. You come back to the unagitated state. So it's a kind of a practice in that sense. So you already have some understanding about this unagitated, unattached, uninvolved state of mind. Now Buddha is highlighting the importance of being in that, dwelling in that state. So etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang upekka. Now, as by seeing something beautiful through the eyes, you can come to a manapa or amanapa. Oh, manapa, manapa. So that means your mind become sort of really interested of that. You feel delighted with that, or you feel little upset about that. So you can jump to these different states, but the Buddha's advice is don't stay in those states now, because the middle state is more refined. Middle state is less friction. Middle state is more unagitated. It is more equanimous. It is the one that you have to maintain. So please return back to that middle state. So therefore, so it's very much like you are practicing. It is very much like it's not mere restriction, but through the understanding you are able to establish your mind in an unagitated state. Now try to consolidate that. Now try to be in that, dwell in that long and more. If the mind go to and jump, don't be there. So such kind of, now it's a kind of a very practical approach he is explaining. Yeah. Yes, sure.
Osarai Swaminansa, thank you for your comments. And yeah, it's like, perhaps you could compare it to like, you could compare it to like drug rehab. You know, if somebody's like an alcoholic or a drug addict, if you put them out in the environment where they can have access to those things, then, you know, they could just easily go back to that stuff. Whereas if you put them in a restricted environment, then they can, you know, perhaps develop the understanding that I don't need these things. It's just, you know, my mind, you know, telling me that I need these things. So it's similar with like,
and
you know.
Again, at a later time, if he go and stay with them, still he should not feel that he need them.
Right. He or she would have to, in that restricted environment, develop that understanding that I don't need this stuff, you know. And then the goal would be to go back out into the world, you know, and, you know, stay free of that stuff, not be affected by that stuff. So similarly to, you know, a monk, if a monk is living in like an urban environment, like a city, if they're like living there full time, then, you know, the effects of that, you know, I guess would assume that, that it could get to them, or it could consume their mind. You know, the effects of living in an urban environment full time could affect their mind, and they could be, in cities and urban areas, you're bombarded by sensuality. You're bombarded by sensuality in these urban environments. So, a monk who's living in this kind of environment full time, one could assume would likely have difficulties maintaining restraint. Whereas, you know, once, you know, if you're living out in the forest and you're maintaining the rules in the vinaya, you know, then, and you know, you're maintaining that restraint, then from there, you know, you can, you know, you can start to, develop the wisdom that you need, to be able to, you know, go back out into the world on, you know, occasion. And, you know, the goal is to develop that wisdom when you're out in the forest, when you're maintaining the rules in the vinaya. You know, it's to develop that wisdom so that once you go back out into the world, you know, whatever occasion it may be, you can maintain your mindfulness. You can maintain that restraint over your senses. And, you know, hopefully a monk who's been living out in the forest and maintaining the rules in the vinaya, they would be able to go out into the world, you know, whenever the occasion arises, that they would go out into the world, and they would be able to have that dispassion to understand that, you know, these things going on in the world, you know, they don't affect me, or they should not affect me. I shouldn't be caught up, you know, or emotionally involved in these things. you know, or craving for these sensual pleasures, or desiring these worldly these things going on in the world, or focusing on them, or being concerned about them. So yeah.
Time is up, by the way. I think we can't have time to go to the next verse, so we have to go to the next verse, by the way. Anything else? Anyone else like to add? Yeah.
You know it's addiction because not because of you take something and it makes you high or something like that. You know it's an addiction because you constantly want to go back to that kind of feeling of normalcy that you had when you took the addictive thing. So like, for instance, if I go out into the town and I feel really good about that, like it's action and it's like something is happening and it's exciting, then that's taking the addictive thing. But I really know it's addictive when my mind keeps going back to that experience, that it would like that again. That's when you know it's an addiction. It's not that you experienced the addictive thing, because you can be addicted to anything. You can be addicted to sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. You can be addicted to chemicals. You can be addicted to behaviors. You can be addicted to people. You can be addicted to all kinds of things. Addiction is not just a chemical. It's not just alcohol. Addiction is a very good word for like upatana. It's like this intense craving. It's addictive. So it's a mental process of I enjoy something and then I want to go back to that enjoyable thing again and again and again. And that's how you know it's addictive, because the mind is constantly seeking the addictive thing that we like. So this is the process of addiction. That's how you know it's something is an addiction. So we can be addicted to the busyness. We can be addicted to the gossip. We can be addicted to the sights and smells. Like I know a lot of people who like to look at photographs of food. They can look at the photograph of the food and enjoy it. It's like intensely enjoyable to them. Yeah. You know, and now the mobile phones have a special mode for food, taking a food photograph. Yeah. And so that you get the optimal image and picture of the food, and yeah, people like looking at the photograph of the food, and it's the presentation of the food that matters more than did it taste good, or because they can imagine that it tasted good. So in this way, you can see how strange addiction is. You don't even need to eat the food; you can just look at the food and imagine.
You can see the monkeys how they are. In our this thing, in the dhanasala, they are around it, watching.
Yeah, they like it. They like just even being nearby. Yeah, they just like looking at it. Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
yeah. but it's even more so in like in Japan. They used to have you didn't just have a menu. You had like a plastic representation of the food, and often you just point. Like it was convenient for me. I would just point at it and say, "I'll have that." Like, and it was just a plastic model of the food item. But this is very important that you understand the nature of addiction. And like I would say, like for me, the thing that I focus on is the coolness and calmness and tranquility. You know, so when I'm out in the town, it's kind of dry and heaty and busy, and it's coarse. It's a coarse pleasure. I do like the association. I do like meeting people and seeing things, and it's interesting and this and that and what's happening and what's changed. You know, what's new? What's gossip? You know, what's news? You know, there can be a timelessness inside the forest. When I go out of the forest, it's like, oh, this is what's going on. This is happening. Inside the forest, there's no, this is happening. It's just today, and I have no idea what today is. I don't know whether it's Monday or Wednesday. I have no idea. And when I'm out, it's oh, this is Monday. It's business day. It's this time of the day.
Banking day.
It's banking day. Yeah, yeah. You're too late for this, and you have to come back tomorrow for that. And you know, it's like you have time as a factor. Here, it's not. It's timeless. It's ancient. Like, it could be. Is it now or is it 2,500 years ago? It's the same as the time of the Buddha. If the Buddha came to my hut today, he would recognize everything, I think, pretty much, right? So what I'm saying to you is that what I find is that, like, I noticed over the years of being here that it has become in a way less monotonous, less boring. And when I go outside, it's not exciting and interesting. You know what I mean? Like, I see the fault in it. Like we were talking about, like, restraint. There may be a restraint required to stay within a monastery, but over time, if you're cultivating, I think, the practice, you actually enjoy it. And it isn't in a phobic way. You're not wanting to be some weird little hermit who wants to avoid other people and you're afraid of those interactions when you're outside. It's just they're not that interesting. There's a disinterest in them. It's okay. Not exciting. It's like, yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Anyway.
Definitely, yeah, that's how the practice and the restraint, everything go hand in hand. And then, so mind understand it's a kind of burning. It is not really enjoyment. So sometimes there's a beautiful simile that when a leper going towards he's using a kind of, what's torch? Kind of burning coal to burn the wounds. Through that, the ache is gone. But he feels some sort of a happiness sensation, happy sensation by a little taking through the burning. But if he continues that, then it can become really spoiled and he can get into death-like situation. But on the other hand, assume that he now fully cured. And then Buddha is asking, if a burning coal is taken closer to you, are you interested in doing that same burning now? No, because he understood how the wound has healed completely. Now, that burning is a kind of a completely mundane, gross kind of happiness. But I am fully healed now. No need of such kind of gross, coarse kind of entertainment. So similarly, when the mind is healing, when mind become more sensitive, more healed, completely calm, tranquil, and endowed with wisdom, so he may see it, that mind may understand, okay, this kind of entertainment is kind of a provocation. It may be really disturbing to the mind. I mean, I can't bear it. I mean, it's a real. It's a burning to the mind. Instead of seeing it as an entertainment to the mind, now it may see the opposite. So that may be the reason that that Buddha mentioned that I can't even touch this woman through the toe. Simple as that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, you liked.
Thank you, Bhante, for bringing the Dhamma to life, and Bhante also, and Sumana for bringing the Dhamma to life. I wonder if Bhante, would you?
Anything?
So I just wanted to say, it looks like the sutta is mostly talking about sila. Not particularly. I keep, I hear references going to our meditation and how to we can develop, this sense restraint through actually practicing and inclining the mind towards calming down rather than going out to get excitement. And but I just wanted to, I was just noticing that it seems so far that in this sutta that he's talking, or at least in these verses that he's talking, the Buddha is talking about more like sila practice, like it said, the Patimokkha. So that being the foundation for, first we develop our sila, and then we can begin to, if we have that firm foundation established, then practice can be a little easier to meditate. And so I was just kind of checking to make sure that was right. Sort of asking, would that be right, Swaminathan?
Yeah, but no, I mean, very briefly, the practice is also ongoing. We can't say it is completely purely, the sila is highlighted. As I mentioned in the previous verse, not just this verse.
Calming down, that's
yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Patimokkha is a means. The end is towards the calming down.
Hmm.
The Patimokkha is a means. The end, you ask what's the purpose. The purpose is to calm down. That's the purpose.
Mm.
because that's such a supporting factor for wisdom itself to arise.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because Patimokkha is just a means.
The thing is now, you can't immediately develop wisdom. So wisdom development takes time. For till that time, you are being fairly protected by using the Patimokkha. Say say you are restraining your body, restraining your faculties, say speech, body. So that basically helps to not avoid provocating the mind, because you are developing the mind. So mind development needs fair amount of calm environment. Say you are maintaining the undisturbed situation in the mind. So then it's it has a more conducive environment for development. So once the wisdom is taking over, when the wisdom is fairly risen, then probably, I mean, you can get some support from that also. But the development of wisdom may take little time. So till that you have to have some sort of a protection. So that basically goes through the discipline. So all these possibilities of danger are being prevented through the discipline. Say you are not being allowed to touch a woman through lust. So if you touch, then you are going and further, you again get and mess up with things. So now through the rule, okay, you are being sort of restricted, not doing it. So you are not promoting that inner tendency, the tendency of lust. You are not being provocated again. So that is further now little calm down. At the same time, you are developing the wisdom also, which reduces the ignorance, thinking that this is beautiful. Now instead of you having understanding, okay, it is constantly changing. Constantly, it can't give lasting happiness. And it doesn't belong to me, and it may not under my control. So something like that. So another way, a deeper understanding is also growing. So when they are going in hand, then you ultimately assume, say, you win. So the wisdom win. Then basically, you don't need to. I mean, then the practice become kind of effortless. Even though you go to the city, now mind is not interested. Now mind is not interested of going and touching a woman. As Buddha mentioned, now even I have no desire to touch this woman, even my toe, not just hand, but not even the toe. So something like that.
Yes, yeah, thank you, yeah. Swaminathan. Yeah. Thank you, Bhante. And so, yes, once we begin practicing more of deeper into the Dhamma of the Buddha, then the wisdom is informing us as well as the sila. But here he's talking to devas. So it's people that aren't practicing, actually. So I think it sounds like he's more like first, you know, develop this sila, mm-hmm, and sense restraint. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm. Or is it mentioned for deva? No. Once the devas, okay. The crowd is the devas.
Yes.
I see. Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're highly refined. Mm. They have pleasure they want.
Yes, but that, I mean, that's like people of the world, basically. I mean, but they're not meditating, is that right? Or they're not actually practicing deeper into the Dhamma yet. So the Buddha has to ask questions related to the Dhamma and his teaching.
Yeah. Not really suffering. At the same time, since they have very refined faculties, so when Buddha teaches very in a beautiful way, they may be capable of understanding. So they have, since they have sharp faculties. Now we, on the other hand, we still have to develop a lot, because our faculties are gross and we need to refine them.
So they're more refined than a normal.
Yeah. So yes. Yeah. That is also another aspect we can think of. Okay, then we'll wind up.
Sarai Bhante.
Yes, yes.
Sorry for interrupting. We have raised hand from this end as well. Would you give the permission to talk, Bhante?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Hope it is related to the discussion.
I hope so.
Okay, yeah.
Nande, I would invite you to unmute your mic and talk now, please.
Thank you very much. I'm actually new to this room. I think the Geshan has just sent me the link, and that's how I joined it. Actually, I joined just now. I mean, today, at the very beginning. And I just want to add something, Bhante, with your Avasara. I was very interested in that, the other, I'm not sure whether he's a monk or the person that was talking about the commentaries with a different kind of perspective, because I could relate to what he's trying to say and then what he's trying to bring it up to. So that's why I was just wanted to talk, otherwise I wouldn't have even interrupt you. But with saying that, I just want to make it very short. So some of the experience I do have, I can relate that what he's talking about, even in the forest, that really when he was looking at the monkeys and looking at the trees, that really how he can see that vividly. It's just the same experience I do have too. So I just want to share with him and then just make sure that I just want to let him know that really it is a good thing happening. That's how I see it. And other point is that really I always, even when I'm reading the Buddha's scriptures and all that, I have realized that really Buddha has mentioned this mind as a separate entity, but the awareness is apart from that mind. So that is what I think the Buddha has mentioned about the Satara Satipatthana. Satipatthana is actually the sati. You're bringing up the sati and then making that awareness. And actually you are dwelling in awareness, not dwelling on, but dwelling in awareness. So once you are dwelling in awareness, you can see what the mind is doing to you. That is the same thing that I think that gentleman or the monk was trying to explain. So I can just relate to that. That's the one thing. And the other point I want to bring up is, as Bhante, you know as well, that really Buddha has mentioned that samadhi paccaya yatha bhuta jnana dassana. Or else he said, samadhi upanissa yatha bhuta jnana dassana. That means through the samadhi, only that really you can see the reality of this world. Or this through the samadhi, only you can see the mamantvaya. You mean that the reality of this world means that actually you are seeing the world as a separate incident, if I put it that way. But actually what you are in that particular position, you are in the awareness. You are living in the awareness. So the rest of the things that really we were talking about, the discipline and whatever we are going to do, that is actually the things happening inside your mind. And that's why Buddha said, purify the mind. And you would have noticed that even that, Bhante, that, you know, when Satara Satipatthana, Buddha was talking about, let the mind go. And then you will have the Satta Bojjhanga built within you. That is what's happening. So it's actually happening. You do not have to discipline and restrict anything. It is happening to you if you allow that to happen. Like you are in the samadhi. And the other word, that when you say samadhi, it is not concentration as that the gentleman mentioned. It is the samadhi is that really you are allowing, opening your mind, and you are allowing things to happen. And when, if you are even in a one sitting, I'm just saying it with my experience. Gishan knows about that. I've talked about that for last 20 years. So it, even in one sitting, you should be able to allow your mind to go away, or the vijnane to let vanish. And then the prajna, the wisdom to come out. That will come out. And after that, doesn't matter whether you are in the forest or in the rural area, everything is just incidents. You are not attaching to that. You are not connecting to that. The example Buddha has given was, one is that really if you are the water, nobody can draw a line on it. That's all I wanted to add to you, add to this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that helps.
Yeah. So basically, here today, actually, all the other monks talking here. So on the other hand, we can actually understand what you are telling is also correct. Now, when we are practicing, say for Satipatthanas, for example, at the beginning, they seems like little alienated because mind is turbulent and not these qualities are fully inbuilt. So they are like outside. But as we continuously develop, so those qualities become more and more inherent, more and more be with yourself. And now ultimately it becomes endowed to the mind. So it is not that mindfulness that you are deliberately maintaining, deliberately trying to establish. Rather, the mind is mindful. So as you mentioned, the mind is in mindfulness. So rather than it is trying to develop mindfulness, now mind is automatically mindful. And Buddha actually highlights that in one sutta called Unnaba Brahmana Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, say, mindfulness is the sort of the refuge for the mind, which is more turbulent, more sort of defiled. And later, when mind being liberated, so that liberated mind is a kind of the dwelling place for the mindfulness. It is not that the liberated person is trying to be mindful, rather that the environment itself is the kind of dwelling place, abiding place for mindfulness. That means he doesn't need to purposely establish mindfulness now, rather mindfulness is there. Mindfulness is already an inherent quality of that sort of mindset. So therefore, yeah, the practice, even though at the beginning appear like difficult, appear like maybe alienated, appear like little artificial, later when the defilements are subsided and fairly uprooted, and then these qualities are sort of properly developed, so then mind being blossomed, mind being cultivated to a higher level, now the necessary qualities are endowed, they are there now. So then we can say, as you said, they are in the mind, so it is not on the mind or something. They are the mind in other terms. Okay, I think then we can wind up the session. We have spent 1.5 hours discussing Thuvattaka Sutta, and it's a very interesting discussion. And I invite Venerable Buddharakhita to do the sharing of merits.
So again, if we can come back to this central theme in today's verses, which is that we discipline our mind to not go somewhere else at the moment and just listen to these words, and that we're going to calm the mind down, just as with the idea being like we're calming it down like the ocean, like we're moving to the middle of the ocean where the waves are not strong, rising and falling too much. So we have been calming our mind down, disciplining our mind to listen to each other today and open our heart. And with this, we are growing the mind, we're growing the Dhamma, we're cultivating the mind. And as a result, we have these beautiful, wholesome qualities of the mind, and we radiate these beautiful wholesome qualities of the mind to the whole universe, and we share these with any recipient beings, and that we ask them to partake and share in the merit of our wholesome mind. And we believe that this is meritorious for them, that they are inspired, that they are touched by our wholesome behavior, our wholesome qualities of mind, and that they are enjoying a benefit from this sharing of our merit, of our wholesome mind, and that it is uplifting them and helping them in their life. So we share this with all beings, all recipient beings, whether it's our ancestors, with our family, with our friends, whether they are alive or they have died and passed on to another life. We share this merit with all beings. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.